Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Jordan Malley along with Matt Peck. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure to follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. We have a great guest for you and a great interview for you today. We have Oliver Maroney, NBA and college hoops writer for UpRocks.com. He hosts the official Big 3 podcast, and he's also a radio host on Dash Radio 2, our friend of Dash Radio, of the Boss Show on Fridays on Dash Radio. You've also seen him on NBA TV. He's an all-around NBA media savant, so you can follow him at O Maroney NBA. Before we get to that interview, I want to remind Bulls fans that you still have an opportunity to enter, if you have not, for a contest to win two tickets to join Matt and I with a guest at the Timberwolves Bulls game on February 9th. All you have to do is quickly, for 30 seconds of your time, all it takes is go to your favorite provider of where you listen to podcasts, whether that's iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Spotify. Leave us a review, screenshot that review, and send it to lockedonbulls@gmail.com. We'll be pulling the winners sometime Friday afternoon, Friday evening. So make sure you get all those entries in before Friday's deadline, and we'll be picking a winner and announcing it this weekend. But without further ado, let's get to the interview with Oliver Maroney. All right, now we welcome on Oliver Maroney, NBA and college hoops writer for UpRocks.com. He's also the official host of the Big 3 podcast. He's a Dash Radio host of the Boss Show on Fridays on Dash Radio, so a Dash Radio friend of the Locked On Bulls podcast here. Oliver, thanks for coming on. How are you?
Doing good. I'm doing good.
So the first thing I want to ask you here, obviously you're the Bulls are headed to Portland to play the Portland Trailblazers tonight. And so the first thing I want to say is the Bulls head out west to meet the Trailblazers. Your overall perspective of the Chicago Bulls, just the transformation from last year into this year, some of the things that you've seen from the Bulls and the way that they are sort of conducting this rebuild on the fly, and maybe some other teams taking a page out of what the Bulls are doing right now and the success that they're having. What's your overall perspective on the Chicago Bulls from afar?
I really like the moves they made this offseason. I was pretty vocal about, you know, the Bulls being, I think what I tweeted earlier in the season before the season started was the Bulls are going to be a top 10 league pass team. And people certainly chimed in and got pretty frustrated or upset or mad or whatever at me. But I truly believed it just because I felt like this team, especially with Fred Hoiberg, was going to play more appealing basketball, whether that was with, you know, a starting five that didn't, you know, include a Jimmy Butler, didn't include a Rondo or a Dwayne Wade or whatever. Whether that was, you know, Chris Dunn playing 30 minutes a night. I just felt like the way that they had put this thing together, I thought it was done better than people gave them credit for. And what I mean by that is Fred Hoiberg, the whole time he's been in Chicago, has not been given an opportunity to actually coach the way he wants to coach. Because he's been given veterans, he's been handed down guys, or they've basically panic bought players like Dwayne Wade or Rondo. And I don't think Jimmy Butler has ever really fit the system or style of play that Fred Hoiberg likes to run. And I think with this team now, you're seeing what he can do and what he's capable of. And I think that's what frustrates me most, is the fact that the Bulls could have been this way for a few years, and they just decided, okay, we're going to try and make the playoffs, give the fans playoff basketball instead of really focus on what Fred was good at, which is coaching young talent, building a core, getting people to buy into a specific system. Very similar to Brad Stevens, except Brad Stevens, at this point, you've seen him be able to kind of change the culture to a point where he can bring in guys like Al Horford and Kyrie Irving, who will buy in because he's put in a winning system. But I think they've done a tremendous job. I really actually think that, you know, it's one of the more underrated stories or storylines in the NBA right now. Although they're not, you know, playing amazingly, they're not, you know, top three in the East or anything crazy. But I think the way that they've been able to transform at least the locker room and kind of the cohesiveness with that team is pretty remarkable.
Yeah, I think it's great that you brought up Fred Hoiberg first, because it seems like Matt and I on this show for the longest time have talked about it, and we've felt similar with other Bulls fans too, in the way that Fred Hoiberg, for the first 2 years that he was here, that he was in Chicago, that he wasn't allowed to run the system the way he wanted to. The players that the way he wanted to run his system didn't really fit. He had the burden of trying to not only figure out how to coach and how to develop players in the NBA, but at the same time, how to deal with egos of budding superstars or veteran superstars, like he had to with Jimmy Butler, or at the end of Rose's era here in Chicago, or even with Rondo and Wade. Like, there were so many facets to Fred Hoiberg's first two seasons with the Chicago Bulls that now he's actually getting a chance to find a way to develop these players and sort of build to his strengths as a college coach and sort of transition that to the NBA. But to kind of top off on that Fred Hoiberg question, in his third season here, and we've had this debate back and forth, and Matt and I think we've come to an agreement that we don't really know the future of Fred Hoiberg outside of the five-year contract that he's going to fulfill. But for you, in terms of how you see NBA coaches and the way they're running systems in the NBA now, how do you think Fred Hoiberg can deal with transitioning in his game and, like you had said, getting players to buy in, and then when the time comes, try and bring on a star player and be able to develop some type of chemistry with that? Would that concern you at all, taking a look around the NBA and how coaches have dealt with bringing in superstars to their team? And what do you think the overall projection is for Fred Hoiberg as an NBA coach heading into the future, maybe 2, 3, 4 years down the road?
Yeah, I see very similar traits to Fred Hoiberg as I do in Brad Stevens. They may not be exact replicas of each other by any stretch of the imagination. No one is. But, I think that when he's given talent, and he needs to maximize that talent, he does a very good job at that. And I think the Bulls need to focus on building this core to a 45 to 50 win team, you know, somewhere in that similar range to where Boston was, where they had, you know, young talented guys on the rise, building with Brad Stevens. And then finally they hit that pinnacle where they, I think they were like the 2 or 3 seed in the East or something like that. They won like 48 to 50 games, somewhere in that range. And at that point, I think that's kind of the turning point to where you can say, okay, we have a winning culture. We have an established culture, and no one star player is going to mess that up or change it drastically. And that's when I think you can really go out and say, hey, free agent X, whoever that is, here's what we have to offer. Here's what we can bring to the table. And, of course, you have to have the right fit. That's the other thing. You can't just go out and ask for Boogie Cousins or someone like that. I don't think that would be a very good move on the Bulls' part. Not to say that they would, but they have to find the right fit, you know, with that same trajectory. So maybe it's looking down the line, it's tough to kind of read who would be interested, where, et cetera. But you look at like players in Philadelphia, like, you know, a Joel Embiid or a Ben Simmons. It's not saying that the Bulls are going to get them. That's not what I'm trying to allude to here. But like that trajectory of like a young budding star, that's who they want to try and bring in at some point. And I think that's what you're going to look at, you know, 1, 2 years down the road for Fred Hoiberg is, okay, what do we need to do to really bring this over the top? And that's what the Celtics did. They brought in a guy like Kyrie Irving. They brought in Al Horford. a huge free agent for them. They almost got Kevin Durant. And I think those three players meshed very well with what they were doing, how they were playing. They were all team-oriented guys, but certainly stars at the same point. So I think the Bulls are going to look for somebody who they can throw into the offense, trust, and know that, you know, they're not going to be that vocal negative locker room, have that vocal negative locker room aspect. So for me personally, if I'm the Bulls, you wait this thing out. You wait for LaVine to really come back and get raring to go as quickly as he can. You bring along Chris Dunn. You bring along some of these other players, young guys. You try and make as many moves as you can with the veteran guys that you're looking to move. Miritich, you know, guys of that nature, maybe a Lopez or whatever. But I think that's where you start, and you build it forward from there. And then, you know, when that time comes, like I said, 45, 50 wins, that's when you probably say, okay, now how do we get to that next tier? How do we get to that next level? And that's how you build, I think, a real championship contender. I mean, the Warriors didn't build this thing overnight. The Celtics didn't build this thing overnight. It's progressive growth each year, year in and year out. And then the marquee free agent comes, the superstar decides to take that chance. And I think that's when you're going to see the fruits of all that labor and everything else that's been put into it.
I'm glad you brought up the fact of bringing in top free agents and how to exactly do that and how to draw free agents to a team like the Chicago Bulls, where for the longest time, I felt like it was 6 to 8 years, the Bulls have swung and missed on a lot of guys that they were hoping to land, especially when Derrick Rose was here. And now outside of that, and when figuring out whether or not Jimmy Butler could be that guy that was sort of going to be able to lure some top free agents here. But now that it's been sort of flipped and turned on its head, and we look at what they got in the return from the Timberwolves, I more wanted to ask you, who out of the three, if you could pick three guys right now that you've been the most impressed with, that maybe you were down on from the 2017 NBA draft. And I guess if you had to reorder guys in a factor that you were high on a guy before, talking about maybe guys like Jason Tatum or De'Aaron Fox or even our own Chicago Bulls and Lauri Markkanen, who's been a couple of guys that you've been really surprised by coming out of the 2017 draft that maybe you were down on before?
I would say, you know, one of them does reside with the Bulls, and I think what's interesting is that I was high on him coming out of college. I was high on him as a player. I just didn't think he'd develop as quickly as he has, and that's Lauri Markkanen. Anybody will tell you can go back and read some of the stuff that I wrote on him. I was over the moon about this guy. I really felt like he was going to be a top five, top six pick, and obviously he fell a little bit, and I think obviously he landed in the right spot, but I think the way that he's progressed is much quicker than I anticipated. I just felt like there were things in his game. And there is. There's still glaring problems, you know, on defense and whatnot. But I think there were just spots in his game where you felt like, okay, well, maybe this may not, you know, move over to the NBA level. Maybe this just won't transcend from those two, or, you know, kind of leagues or organizations, just because, you know, they're less athletic, they're smaller. There's a lot of things that can be attributed to NCAA success over NBA success. And we've seen it time and time again. Players somehow come to the NBA and they're just either not ready or need a year or two to kind of develop and grow. And that was not the case. And like I said, I anticipated Markkanen being an excellent player. Anything that you read of mine is he's the next Dirk. And that was literally the comparison. And I hate doing comparisons because I feel like it just sets an expectation that's, you know, not going to be met. But with Markkanen, I was confident enough to think that that could potentially happen just because of the way he plays, the inside-out game. I got to see him a lot because I do cover a lot of Pac-12 hoops. So, that was one guy. I think Tatum is another guy for me where, look, I trust Danny Ainge. And I even wrote about it, like, right after they traded the first pick. If Danny Ainge didn't feel like, you know, he was getting the best value at number one, then good on him for having the guts to trade down. But what happens if this pick turns out to be atrocious? And with Jason Tatum, you knew that you were going to get scoring. Like, he was probably the most dominant college scorer, or polished college scorer, that I've seen in a long time. And I saw him at Hoop Summit and a couple other things in high school. And you just could tell that he was kind of a man among child. But I think the glaring problem with Tatum was just like, okay, well, if he goes to the Celtics, he's going to get 5 minutes of playing time, because you thought about Hayward, and you thought about Jaylen Brown, and you thought about all the other, like, wing depth that they had, Bradley, you know, different players like that before they had been traded. And it just didn't add up. And so for me, I'm shocked not only that he's getting as many minutes as he is, obviously due to kind of unforeseen and unfortunate events, but and more or less just playing as efficiently as he has. Now, he's kind of hit a wall. He's been less efficient as of late. We'll see if he can turn it around. I think every rookie at some point in the season experiences that rookie wall where teams actually start focusing on them, game planning for them, watching film, watching tape, and taking options away from them, and it makes it much more difficult. But I think he's another player. If I was to say, like, one more guy kind of out of the box, you know, Jordan Bell has been, and I know I'm bringing this up to Bulls fans, but yeah, Jordan Bell, I covered Jordan Bell in college, you know, got to know him and his team very well. I just didn't know him going to the Warriors that he was even going to get minutes. I honestly thought they would send him down to the G League for a year when they first got him. I was just like, okay, well, this is a good stash play. You know, maybe he gets a minute here or there, but they've got McGee, they've got Petrulia, they've got other guys in their front court. Like, where is he going to fill in? And he's carved out a role for himself, and I'm, you know, everybody's high on him now. He's, you know, one of the most interesting, I think, draft prospects in recent years, just because of, you know, being sold off and just kind of the situation that he was put in. But yeah, that's another guy that I've been really, really surprised with, just because, you know, his size may have been an issue, you know, and nobody really knew if that was going to be an issue. He's athletic as all get out. And I think that his ability to block shots is just a natural, gifted instinct. But I think, yeah, like I said, I just didn't anticipate him having this much run this quickly. And I think that's true to be said with most of this rookie class. And you're looking at Donovan Mitchell, you're looking at other guys like that. There's just so many guys that came out of this class. Dylan Brooks, at like 41 or whatever, playing the second most minutes out of any rookie or something like that. There's so many guys in this draft class that it's just, it's actually quite amazing. I think this draft class may go down as one of the greatest if they continue at this kind of trajectory, just because of how many successful stories there have been.
Yeah, and I think you brought up a good point too, especially with Jordan Bell, and I'm glad you brought that up too, because outside of what happened with selling off the pick here in Chicago and the Bulls clearly not having any interest in drafting him, he wasn't ever on the Bulls draft board. It was more so just selling the pick. And I think the most important point that you brought up there was guys being drafted and put on teams in situations where they can thrive and be successful right away. And I thought, for one, where I talked with my co-host, Matt Peck, where I said, you know, if Jordan Bell had ended up on the Chicago Bulls, I asked him, do you think Jordan Bell would be the same type of player with the same type of confidence level that he has right now, that he has been playing in the NBA in maybe three quarters of a season so far? And, you know, it makes me think about players who do go to situations that don't work out, and you see the talent level there and the frustrations that could happen. But you can see it from the flip side of guys that teams were sort of down on and or just kind of overlooked, passed over. They go to the right situation and you see them blossom into great players with a lot of confidence. And I think that's one of the biggest points of them all, is a lot of these guys that were picked at certain spots or were slid down on the draft board are playing with high confidence, and it's everything for them. But I wanted to switch topics here real fast and go to the Chicago Bulls matchup tonight with the Portland Trail Blazers. So we don't get to talk a whole ton about Western Conference hoops, but that's why I was happy to bring you on, because you're tapped in with the Trailblazers. You're tapped in with everything that's going on in the Western Conference. So can you just give Chicago Bulls fans from an outside perspective of what's going on in Portland and their situation, obviously with the one of the most dominant backcourts in the NBA with Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum. Sort of where is the path for Trailblazers? What's the expectation for the Trailblazers? And sort of, I know Damian Lillard had sort of a sit down with the franchise and the front office to see kind of what the direction was here and what the commitment level was here. So from an outsider's perspective, a team that hangs between 5 and 8 seed in the Western Conference, what's sort of the vibe going on with the Trailblazers right now? And could you see them making any deals heading up to the trade deadline on February 8th?
Yeah, the Blazers situation is unique. They're way over the cap. They will continue to be way over the cap as long as things sit the way that they are. Unfortunately, you know, for the Blazers, the really unfortunate part is just, you know, people here in Portland think that they are, you know, they should be a top four seed. They should be contending. They should be better than what they are, what their record indicates. They're playing better as of late. I just think the problem fundamentally with this team is the deals they've made have really come to hurt them. And I'm sure Bulls fans kind of know what that's like. But, you know, I think you look at some of these players. I mean, there's like Evan Turner doesn't have a solidified role on this team. Sometimes he starts, sometimes he's not. Sometimes he plays 25 minutes, sometimes he plays 10 minutes, sometimes he doesn't even play. You know, Myers Leonard was, I think he's about $11 million a season right now, and he hasn't played a lick. Mo Harkless has been in and out of the lineup for months now, and definitely hasn't played or lived up to the contract that he signed last offseason. There's just a lot of contracts, and I'm not going to say they're bad, and most people would. Most people would say, why did they sign Evan Turner? I think there's uses for them, and that's what's frustrating about it, is just the inability to utilize all these players. I think maybe they went overboard in signing too many, and you saw this past offseason, they dumped Allen Crabbe for basically nothing, and they gave him to the Brooklyn Nets because they couldn't afford the contract, and Allen Crabbe was arguably the team's third or second best three-point shooter, depending on how you look at it in the numbers. And so you can tell this team was trying to kind of sell off some of these bad deals because they're way over the cap, or they were, and they will continue to be. And I think really what, you know, going into the regular season, people were thinking, okay, the last 20 games or so, Portland traded for Nurkic, offloaded Plumlee, and Nurkic became this just insanely good pick and roll big with Dame and CJ, and it just worked, and you could just tell they were just having fun playing basketball. They were, gosh, I think they won like, I don't remember the exact number. I think it was like 16 of 20 games or something like that going into the final games of the season, but Nurkic just was playing at an elevated level, and so you've got this situation where this season Nurkic hasn't really played up to par, and he's going to have to be re-signed as well this offseason if he's not traded. So I think the team is just in kind of a weird transition period of like, what do we do? And Damian Lillard sat down with the ownership, Paul Allen. It wasn't to express like frustration, I don't think. I think it was just to get an idea of what they were going to do. If Paul Allen, the owner of the Portland Trailblazers, was willing to reach into his pocketbook and go out and get somebody. And I think he got that reassurance. And Paul Allen, you know, he's got all the money in the world, and he's shown an ability to throw money at guys if it's the right time or if he feels like it's the right fit. But I think where you get yourself into trouble is, even if you have all the money in the world, you can't just go and get LeBron. You can't just go and get, you know, DeAndre Jordan. You still have to give a team assets in order to get them. And the problem is the Portland Trailblazers, not only have they not, you know, the two assets they have, they're not going to deal, in my opinion. But the rest of the team doesn't have enough value to be able to just trade them. I think a lot of teams aren't interested in a lot of their contracts. And I think that is a huge problem. And in my opinion, you have to give some to take some. So right now you're just in a situation where I think if it were me, I would be playing the Evan Turners, the Mo Harklesses, the Myers Leonards as much as I possibly could to try and build some trade value up. But now, since we're so late in the game, there's really no point. And I think they're just in a very, very difficult situation right now. I know the fan base is very frustrated because, look, you have two amazing backcourt players, like you mentioned, one of the best in the NBA, I'd say. In CJ and Dame, and you have really nothing else that can support it. And that's not a knock on the team. That's not a knock on the players they have. I just don't think they're being utilized properly. And I think the lineups, the changes, et cetera, just aren't doing much for the Portland Trailblazers right now. So for me, I mean, it's probably one of the more frustrating seasons that I can remember just from a fan base's perspective. Just because you have this talent and you can't get everything that you want out of them because they don't have anybody to really work with or play with at the same level. And there's not many moves that can be made if they want to make them. Sure, they can go out and try and make trades. Like I said, I just think it's going to be very, very difficult for them. But as I said, as of late, they're playing better. They just beat Evan last night. They're going to be going home tonight to play against Chicago. And I think this will be one of those games where, like a lot of this season, they could be down early. I would not be shocked. And they may have to try and climb out of the hole that they're putting themselves into because it's one of those grueling kind of back-to-back. LA is not too far away from Portland, but at the same time, they probably didn't get in until, I would assume, 1 or 2 in the morning. They're going to be tired. They just played a full 4 quarters against the LA Clippers and let them back into a game. They were up by, I think it was 21 or 22 at one point. And that's been kind of the story of the season, is just the fact that they can't really get guys rest because they haven't been able to maintain leads. So I think the Bulls have a really good opportunity tonight, to be quite honest, just because of the way that the Portland Trailblazers have played and being on the back-to-back and having less rest.
Yeah, the Portland Trailblazers fans, I think, can take a little bit of a sigh of relief. And for one, Chris Dunn is going to miss the game tonight. This is going to be a 6th straight game out with that concussion after he hit his face against the Golden State Warriors. Lauri Markkanen is also out. He is dealing with a personal issue. There are rumors out there that he is expecting his first child. So without Lauri Markkanen and without Chris Dunn, and it seems like Nico Mirotic is going to be a game-time decision with that right quad that he's been working on, that he had a little bit of an injury or some tightness going on there. But it brings up a point for me in moves that the Portland Trailblazers want to make, more specifically a team that over the last 2 or 3 weeks, Matt and I have talked about possible places where Nico Mirotic would fit and a place where he maybe could go and start right away, and assets that maybe would drive the Bulls to be able to move him. And Portland's been coming up. Obviously, there was some inclination that maybe Portland was interested, maybe they weren't. But in terms of Nico maybe being a possibility to be put in Portland, how do you see that would be fit? And would there be any motivation for the Portland Trailblazers to move a first round pick in order to acquire Nico Mirotic if they had to give up on a guy like Mo Harkless or, like you had said, Myers Leonard, to try and get out from underneath one of those contracts? Would they be willing to move on from a guy like Harkless, who I know is only 24 still? And like you had said, Myers Leonard not getting any minutes and still owed $23 million through 2019 and 2020. Is that something that they would look to do, or are they trying to look for a bigger picture here? Maybe even a DeAndre Jordan at the deadline and having to trade off one of their young assets that maybe they won't have enough money to bring back. And I'm talking like maybe a Yusuf Nurkic. Is that something that the Portland Trailblazers would be interested in? And how would you see a fit if they did end up trading for a guy like Nico Mirotic, who can stretch the 4, shoot the 3, and right now he's playing the best basketball I've ever seen him play in the NBA?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Portland Trailblazers would be certainly interested. I don't think there's any question about it. I do know that Myers is from kind of the Chicago area, you know, Illinois.
Right.
I've always kind of thought that maybe Fred Hoiberg could unlock Myers Leonard. And I think that this is one of the most frustrating things, of all the contracts that I've seen signed. I think Myers Leonard was one where you just looked at it and said, okay, now the Blazers are going to put him in a position to succeed. They've paid him the dollars. They've decided that they're going to try and keep him on this roster and make him, you know, a piece of that team. And they just haven't done that. They haven't even utilized him at all. And I understand that, you know, he has some flaws in his game, no doubt about it. But I think there's a lot of potential there, and I still do. And I'm going to continue to say that until I'm proven otherwise. And look, he's been in the NBA a long time. He's had opportunities, but they've been very, very short. He started a few games, I think it was two seasons ago, and then he injured his shoulder, and that was it. I mean, that was the end of it. Ed Davis kind of took over that role. There was a couple other players that took over that role, and that was it for Myers. And then, now Nurkic is the guy. But I do think that Myers brings a lot to the table, especially in the Fred Hoiberg system, because he can shoot the three. I've seen him do it in practice. I've seen him do it in games. He is really, really efficient. And I like that style of his game. Now, is he the best defender? No, not at all. Does he have flaws in the game? Of course. Any player that's on the trading block probably does, but I think his are definitely more glaring. But I do think that if there is a chance for him to kind of reinvigorate or bring back his career, I think Fred Hoiberg would be a good option. I just think that he's got a lot of potential, and it's been really untapped. Nobody's really given him opportunity. And you've seen all sorts of players. Chris Dunn looked awful last year, like just atrocious. It was hard to watch him play basketball because you knew what kind of talent he was. And not to say that Chris Dunn is Myers Leonard or vice versa, but I've seen Myers Leonard play some pretty bad basketball. I've also seen Myers Leonard play great basketball. And for him, it's confidence, in my opinion. It's not even about his game. His game could be very good in this league. It's a matter of confidence, and it's a matter of actually giving him a chance to play 20 or 30 games, giving him a chance to play 20 or 30 minutes a night. Is the team going to do that? Is the team going to wager part of their future to take a chance on him? I don't know, but I think if given the opportunity, I think he could be an absolute steal, quite frankly. And that's, you know, I do know Myers. And I've had the opportunity to know him for a while, and I just think that he's got a lot to bring to the table. And I think on the Nurkic's side, I think the Portland Trailblazers need somebody like that. They absolutely need somebody who can knock down threes, can play back to the basket if need be, but really, they need to be able to stretch the floor better, and they need consistent 3-point shooters. And Mo Harkless isn't that. Aminu, as much as he's shooting well this season, isn't that. They just don't have somebody like that anymore, and I think the void of Allen Crabbe is starting to show as the season progresses. So, yeah, I think the Blazers would definitely be interested if they could offload a Myers Leonard or a Mo Harkless. I think it's going to be difficult for the Blazers to move Mo Harkless. I'll be quite honest on that, just because I think they still see potential there. As you mentioned, I think he's 24. He's got a very, very good contract in the scheme of the NBA right now. I mean, I think it's about $10 million a season. And you look at his game and just what he brings. He's athletic. He's a slasher. He's got very, very good defensive instincts. He's a player like, you know, I would really be shocked if he wasn't like a 15-year kind of NBA player when it's all said and done, and somebody who can be a, you know, 10, 15 point a night kind of guy, get a few assists, get a few rebounds. But he's a lot of the time outside of the box score. He does a lot of things outside that people just don't recognize. Diving for loose balls, going after guys on defense, locking guys up. He just does a lot of things that people don't recognize a lot of the time. So I think he's a guy that the Blazers may hold on to, depending on the deal, depending on what's at stake, depending on what another team wants. just because I think they still see some potential there.
I like that you brought up both of those, and I'm glad that you talked in depth about not only Myers-Leonard, but Mo Harkless too, because those would be the two pieces that I could see the Bulls trying to move for, one being Mo Harkless, because the Bulls are so desperate for wing play right now. And with the opportunity that Denzel Valentine has got to play at the three, with his offensive progressions, it's been great this season. He's taken steps forward, but the defensive side, he's taken a few steps forward with that, but it's clear that maybe that's not the type of role that Denzel Valentine can play, at least at the 30 to 32 minute clip. He's trying to carve himself out a role on the bench as a reserve and maybe play more towards that appeal. So that's why I figured maybe a wing player that maybe just needs a new start outside of Portland would be an interest for the Bulls. But it's interesting that you do say that Portland is still sees something there with him, but Myers-Leonard would be somebody else too. Obviously the Omer Asik deal fell through yesterday with the New Orleans Pelicans. So if the Bulls are trying to move Robin Lopez or somebody else, they're obviously going to need another center to play some quality minutes, because Cristiano Felicio looks like a ghost of himself from last year. And I don't think that they really commit themselves to being able to put him out there 30, 32 minutes a night and be successful. So it'd be nice to see Myers-Leonard. And obviously that contract would be something that the Bulls would have to agree to pay a guy outside of just an expiring contract or for the next 2 years. So those are definitely interesting pieces, and I'm glad you brought them up. Some other things I wanted to talk to you about real fast before I let you go. Can you talk to the fan base about the Chicago fan base in general? Because I know the big three was here in Chicago, and this was the first season that they did the big three. Talk to me a little bit about your experience with the big three, what it means for basketball fans moving forward into the future, and how it can captivate people, and what to expect in year two of the big three, some of the successes that the big three had, and maybe some of the downfalls and things that you could see the big three changing that would elevate not only the attention around the league in the summer, but also what it could shape for basketball looking forward.
Yeah. I mean, I think the big three is the void of summer basketball. You know, it fills the void of summer basketball. Apologies. It's really fun. A lot of people have said, you know, on TV, it's not as entertaining as it is in person. And I do find that to be true. I still find the TV and the telecast, the way that they brought it in. I mean, you've got guys like Gus Johnson calling the games and stuff. I mean, it's just, it's really fun. It's exciting. I like to see, you know, a lot of the veterans be able to play, be able to see them once again. I mean, you've got former Bulls players like Kendall Gill and
Charles Oakley.
Charles Oakley, Boozer. Boozer just announced for season two, so he'll be in there. But I think the real, like, unique part about this whole league is not only are the rules different, but I find it brings me back to late 1980s, early 1990s basketball. It's 3-on-3 basketball with some additions. Ice Cube and company decided to insert 4-point shots. So there's like little circles outside of beyond the 3-point line. So you can hit a quote unquote 4-point shot about 5 to 7 feet behind the 3-point line, I think, something like that. It's deep. I've attempted it. It's pretty hard. He's added some things to the game, but I think, you know, there's a 14-second shot clock, so you got to get off shots pretty quickly. But it's still a lot of basket-to-basket isolation, like bang in the paint kind of game. And it's just different. It's fun to watch, especially because there's not much basketball on in the summertime. And the ticket prices are reasonable. Which is great for basketball fans, because I know whether it's the Bulls, whether it's the Blazers, whether it's the Warriors, like every NBA game, and not to knock them, they need to make their money, but it is extremely expensive to go to games, especially if you want a halfway decent seat. The Big Three does a really good job of basically keeping the ticket prices low and still having, you know, that like family atmosphere of it. There's 4 games back to back. I think they're going to change that a little bit this season, but basically it's 4 games for the price of 1 admission ticket. So you get, you know, like 4 hours of basketball for basically 1 ticket price. And it's pretty cool. I like the way that they've done it. The format was great. The championship was fun. Every week there was something new. I mean, I had the greatest opportunity. I feel like just with them, it was wonderful. I traveled with them for, I think, 5 or 6 weeks of the season. And me and Michael Rapoport, who is one of the sideline reporters, actually, were able to, like, go to the practices and, you know, shoot around with some of the guys. I mean, you're seeing, like, guys like Charles Oakley putting up shots. Gary Payton is talking trash to Rashard Lewis, who's battling someone one-on-one. You know, the practices were very, you know, everybody took them a little bit differently, but everything just in general, the game is just different. It's exciting. It's fun to watch. It's fun to watch, you know, players that you saw 10, 15 years ago go back at it again. And you've still got some young guys in there. And I would say, you know, quite frankly, the other thing that people really thought this league was a retired players league. And that's not really what it is at all. When Keane first had this idea, it was based around Kobe's 61-point game when he retired. And he said, like, how could a player score 61 points? Granted, it was on a ton of shots. How could a player of Kobe's caliber say, I'm gonna hang up my shoes, I'm done, when he just scored 61 points in his last game? And so that was the idea of it. It wasn't, you know, hey, let's get all these retired basketball players back in and let's get all these fans excited. Like, they have no-name guys or guys that don't have as much namesake as others that are in this league because they can play. They've got guys like Andre Owens, who probably nobody knows of, played overseas for many, many years, went undrafted, played in Indiana for a season, played in Utah for a season, but he was averaging, I think, like close to 20 points a game in the Big Three. And it's because he's, you know, I think he's like 31 or 32, and was fresh off of playing in Europe and just has game. And there's a lot of guys like that. Xavier Silas, who's like basically, you know, one of the G League MVPs right now, played in the Big Three last season and was one of the bright spots on Scalabrini's team. So there's guys that, you know, are under the radar that are getting looks, that are getting opportunities. You saw Josh Childress of the Big Three get an opportunity with the Denver Nuggets this offseason. He was out of the league for a long time. So I think it's giving players an opportunity, and I think what's cool is it's definitely separate from the G League. It's not something where players are looking to grow or improve. I think players are just looking to play extremely competitive basketball. And like I said, I don't think people really saw that when this was announced originally. And after seeing the game, you can understand, like, they really go at it. Charles Oakley elbowed, I think it was Al Harrington, in the head, and they went back at it, like, talking trash to each other. Part of it's entertainment, part of it's just competitive nature, but I think it's that old-school mindset. So if you're, like, you know, a Bulls fan that watched those MJ, you know, Michael Jordan Bulls championship runs, this would be the league for you. Like, just the way they play and the attitude and all, like, the extra stuff with it, it's totally up your alley.
You're right now, you're catering to, I think, a lot of fans in the Chicago area, especially. You talked about a lot of former players that were a part of the big three, like names, like we had said, Carlos Boozer, Charles Oakley, Brian Scalabrine, like these players that Bulls fans know that they loved when they were here. And I love that you said that it's like watching late 80s, early 90s basketball, because I know from talking to outside of a millennial fan base and to a fan base that's maybe an older generation that kind of misses that 80s, 90s sort of feel, this is sort of what the league should go towards and attract fans that did like that style of play and that are bringing back some of these players that maybe people in their 40s or their 50s can reminisce about. But it also gives millennials an opportunity to get a look at some of these great players and being able to see how the trash talking goes. And it's also just a different element. And I think the Big Three being in Chicago, and you talking about the ticket prices of being able to go out into a summer game, you know, in the middle dead heat of the summer and terrible humidity here in Chicago, you can go head to the United Center for a weekend and watch these guys play. And like you had said, the cost of tickets, especially for Chicago Bulls fans, they can feel that too, because even whether or not the Bulls are bad or good, ticket prices are still through the roof. And the United Center to watch a game in Chicago Bulls is still a marquee game around the NBA. So that's a great another great facet about the Big Three. Before I let you go, though, I want to ask you, who do you think is going to be the biggest name dealt in the NBA before the trade deadline is over? Do you think it's already happened in Blake Griffin with that move, or do you foresee anybody else being moved that maybe is a big name, maybe going to Cleveland, or DeAndre Jordan getting out of the Clippers? Like, is there any other big name that you can think of off the top of your head that might be dealt or moved before the NBA trade deadline on February 8th?
It's hard to see Cleveland being able to match whatever the Clippers want for DeAndre Jordan, if that's the way they want to go, or if that's the direction they want to go. But I guess if there's a move to be made, I'd probably say DeAndre Jordan's the guy. And, you know, any team that can get him would be happy to get him. I think he's, you know, one of the best NBA players, big men in the league. But I you know, the problem for me is just like understanding why Cleveland would even make that move, because I think they're so far off from what the Warriors are now that even adding a DeAndre Jordan and subtracting, let's say, Tristan Thompson and a pick, or Tristan Thompson and a couple other players like Shumpert or whoever they want to throw in their jazz, whatever the names are, I just don't think it's enough. And I think what really is interesting about this whole trade deadline is the fact that people really seem to think that that's going to put them over the top. I don't think that's even remotely close. I think they would need to legitimately add a Anthony Davis, a, you know, DeMarcus Cousins before he got hurt, just a big name. Maybe a Blake Griffin would put them over the top, but like that would be the type of player I could see them being able to compete with the Warriors, let alone beating them. So I find it hard to believe that any other players are going to be dealt. I think Lou Williams could probably be had for a first-round pick. I wouldn't be shocked to see Derek Favors be moved. That would be one name I would be keeping an eye on, just because Utah doesn't sound like wants to match that contract. I'm not 100% on that, but you know, the latest that was out was about Derek Favors, you know, and Utah, whether they wanted to give him that extended contract or not. But I think those are the players I'd be looking at. I don't think there's anybody that's going to be bigger than Blake Griffin, though. I think Blake Griffin is I'm very high on Blake Griffin. I'm one of the very few, I think. I think Blake Griffin is a transcendent talent if he's healthy. If he's healthy is a big asterisk next to it, but I think he is one of the best players in the NBA when he's healthy. And his game has grown so much since he got into the league. It's incredible. I don't think I've ever seen a change in a player's game as much as I have with Blake Griffin ever. I really don't. I mean, he came into the league as a dunker, a guy who could shoot maybe 5 to 7 foot jumpers, hook, kind of lazy hook shots, I guess you could call them. And now he's out there shooting threes, and it looks good. Like, it's consistent. The shot itself is consistent. He's making free throws. He had a horrible time the first few years of his career being able to make free throws. And now he's been, you know, in crunch time, teams don't need to foul him anymore because he can make his free throws. So I think he's a guy that's probably going to be the biggest name to be dealt. And, well, he's already been dealt, but that's the biggest name in my opinion. And I think Detroit really got a good deal from it, even though a lot of people are saying that it wasn't a good deal. I think that Blake Griffin is definitely, if he's healthy, that's a player you want on your team.
Oliver, I want to thank you so much for joining us here on Locked On Bulls. Remember, you can follow Oliver on Twitter at @OMaroneyNBA. Read all of his columns at uprocks.com. Also, listen to his new radio show on Dash Radio. It's a great show. It starts at 7 a.m. Central Time and re-airs at 8 p.m. Central Time on Fridays on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, in the Dash Radio app. Some great information about the Trailblazers and where things can be moved about the Big Three. Once again, thank you so much for joining us here, Oliver. It's been a great chat.
Hey, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Want to thank our guests today, Oliver Maroney, NBA and college hoops writer for UpRocks.com and also the host of the Big 3 podcast. Great information about the Portland Trail Blazers heading into tonight's game, as well as maybe a trade partner for Nico Mirotic. And hopefully you learned a little bit more about the Big 3 if you weren't familiar before. Remember, you can follow him on Twitter at OMaroneyNBA. But remember, you can follow us on Twitter and on social media at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls_Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you'll find us. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Reminder, get those reviews in for a chance to win two tickets for you and a guest to join Matt and I at the Timberwolves Bulls game on February 9th. All you have to do is submit a review on your favorite podcast platform, whether that's iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, wherever you like listening to podcasts. Simply leave us a review, screenshot that review, and send it to lockedonbulls@gmail.com, and you'll be automatically entered to win. We'll be pulling those winners sometime on Friday afternoon or Friday evening, so make sure you get those reviews in. But for Jordan and our guest Oliver Maroney, we are out. Thank you so much for listening. Enjoy the Trailblazers Bulls tonight.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.